Hey there, it's Air Talk. Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle today. And we are taking your questions, as we always do every day, about COVID-19, your safety, things that you're curious about in the latest research on the virus, headlines that you've seen that you want translated. And joining us today is Peter Chin Hong, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UC San Francisco Medical Center. Dr. Chin Hong, thank you very much for being here. And, you know, first of all, I think that a lot of folks are looking at this headline out of the news of vaccine development related to the U.S. ordering up 100 million doses of vaccine from Pfizer and a company called BioNTech SE. You know, when people read this, how much should their hopes be getting up about how it's going with developing a vaccine?
Well, Libby, thanks for having me on. First of all, I love being on the show.
We love having you.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. The vaccine investment, this news this morning was great news that the U.S. is investing in as part of Operation Warp Speed. I would say that the announcements of these particular two companies was a little bit surprising because we haven't seen as much data from them as yet, but I guess it reflects some hope in this particular group. We have seen great data overall from other groups, particularly I would say Moderna and Boston, for the first U.S. company, I think, to show robust data in some of their early phase 1-2 trials, and now they're about to recruit for large tens of thousands of people to be tested. And of course, the leader in Europe has been the Oxford group, and they've been really, they are actually ahead of Moderna in terms of recruitment of patients. And I would say overall from these two groups and others around the world, the results have been super promising. You know, people have robust antibody levels after getting the vaccine. There hasn't seemed to be any untoward safety effects so far, although the time is a little bit short in terms of follow-up of patients. But so far, so good. And there's also a big diversity of kinds of vaccines that people are using. So I think overall, I feel optimistic about the vaccine situation. I'm not sure that we'll certainly have it in time as people are hoping for early in the year. I'm hoping so. But again, these things take time, and you know, the next phase of studies in large groups of people will basically follow people who have vaccine versus those who don't in terms of who gets COVID and who doesn't. So it's a little bit, depends on how many cases are in the community and so on.
So although that this is a good sign, I mean, we're not saying that, like, okay, this means that the U.S. has ordered up a vaccine and it will be available, you know, November 1st or whatever. I mean, this is just one more step in the process of development, right?
Yes, it's just saying that we are behind the process of distribution once we have the data. And I think the general public is concerned about safety in general, but I would say that scientists and people working on the vaccine will definitely not release something unless they're convinced that it's safe for the public. So I think, you know, I think in medicine we think about efficacy and also safety, but I know that the public is very concerned just looking at some of the polls about, you know, potentially it coming out too soon. So you kind of have to balance that calculus with, you know, efficacy, but then enough time so that you're convinced that there's no safety, bad safety signal.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong is an infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at the UCSF Medical Center. Moving on to another headline that I'm hoping you can help us translate here, Dr. Chin Hong. UCLA researchers are looking at antibodies for the coronavirus, and their findings, I think, related to some other research out of King's College on antibodies falling quickly after somebody develops an immunity to initial immunity to the virus, or at least a defense mechanism against the virus. This study released Tuesday by UCLA showed that antibodies against coronavirus fall sharply during the first 3 months and decreased by roughly half every 73 days in people who had mild cases of coronavirus. What do you read out of these findings and what it means for people feeling safe if they've caught COVID once? Should they then feel safe about their future risk?
Yeah, thanks for bringing on this important point, Libby. I think I would break it down as follows. First of all, it's not that surprising to me. Actually, there are other infections that we know about where natural immunity, meaning the immunity you get from, you know, the community, is not as good as vaccine immunity. Take HPV, for example. You know, when you get HPV, human papillomavirus, and you get a wart or you get a precancer lesion, and that's the reason you do pap tests, that doesn't really generate much of a great antibody response. That's why people can get it over and over again. And if you want to think about it and step back, that infection is very local, like it's at the mucosal level, so your body doesn't get super angry and doesn't make antibodies to try and fight the next time you get it. That's kind of like the general idea. So when you get an injection or an immunization with the HPV vaccine, all of a sudden your body sees it for sure in the bloodstream, and it's like super angry, and it's going to make these antibodies to fight the next time you get it. So take the coronavirus now and COVID-19. When people have mild infections, it's just kind of like local, like you have a cold, or maybe you don't have any symptoms. Your body isn't seeing much of it, and the reason why you don't feel that bad is because the fact, I mean, it's associated with the fact that you're not making antibodies at all, or not many, you know, not a robust, you know, battalion or army of antibodies to fight it, because it's just kind of mild, it's staying in the mucosal area. But if you get a vaccine, my prediction, based on some of the data we have so far anyway, from, you know, what we just talked about in the last few minutes, is that you would generate a much more robust antibody response, which will be superior to those individuals who are very mild or no symptoms. So that's kind of the way I position it. And it also means that when, you know, it's not a reason to go out and get COVID from a COVID party. I mean, obviously, that seems like a no-brainer, but, you know, it's not like a chicken pox party where you can go and get chicken pox naturally, because getting COVID naturally doesn't mean that you'll be protected the next time around. I would add, as my last comment around about that, is that so far we haven't really seen too much convincing evidence of reinfection yet, but I think, you know, as time goes on, we would see if that silver lining continues to hold true.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF, taking your questions right now about the coronavirus and risks and things that you're just curious about in terms of understanding this reality we live in now. So Dave from West LA emailed us, since research shows it's aerosol that spreads in air, will plexiglass at banks, supermarkets, and, you know, the way businesses have been setting up plexiglass, will that help to stop the spread? And I know Dave talks about aerosolized, but we've had experts on before say that, you know, primarily the community spread is through droplets. Can you translate or kind of break down Dave's concerns about whether plexiglass is effective?
Yeah, so Dave brings up a great point. And just for the general audience, just to review, an aerosol is just basically giving a droplet superpowers. So, like, an aerosol is like you have a liquid in a can of hairspray, well, actually in the old days, or even the new bottles.
Oh, they're still pretty aerosolized, yeah.
You spray it. Thanks for educating me, Libby. You spray that can or that bottle, and all of a sudden that liquid gets superpowers. You know, it can go further. It can kind of, you like see it in the light, in like a shaft of sunlight, and you can see like suspensions of that these smaller droplets. Essentially, an aerosol is just a smaller droplet, so they can float a little bit longer. So, like you said, Libby, you know, I don't worry about that too much in the general community for a bunch of different reasons. The first is like the virus is like super lazy. It's still going to prefer to lay down on a droplet, and the droplet is much heavier than some of these smaller drops in aerosol, so it falls usually between 3 feet. That's why a distance of 6 feet gives you a cushion of 3 additional feet in which to protect. But of course, that's not all what we're recommending these days, which is to wear a mask in addition, particularly if you can't control your environment. So I think together the mask plus staying away, particularly if you're in the outdoors, although Dave was bringing up the situation of the cashier at the supermarket, for example. But if the cashier is wearing a mask and has a plexiglass, I think it gives plenty of protection. And there haven't really been any convincing outbreaks in the absence of mask wearing in these particular indoor situations. But it's something that we're continuing to monitor. And again, the whole name of the game is not like absolute prevention and to worry about every possible permutation that in which you can get the virus, you know, like cleaning your iPhone every 10 seconds. It's really about risk reduction. So, like, again, I always tell, you know, my friends and colleagues, like, the way I think about it is, like, if somebody gives you a cholesterol pill for heart disease prevention because you have high cholesterol, we're not saying you're never going to get a heart attack ever, but we're going to reduce your risk, like, substantially. So I think about all of these interventions and protections in the same way. Like, sure, you can, like, in the lab simulate aerosols and you can show that it can fly all across the room, or you can, like, look for virus in the air vents and on the floor of a pharmacy room. But at the end of the day, the biggest bang for the buck is protecting yourself against those droplets.
And that's related to a question that Sarah from Tustin writes in about, you know, the evidence that masks help stop the virus. I mean, you're talking about these droplets that even cloth masks help a bit with transmission of the virus, right?
Totally. And so just to review, like, the mask science, first of all, like, I would remind everyone, including myself, that, you know, we learned a lot about masks since the end of February to now. So, like, that's why some of the recommendations have changed. And it's not about people, like, sort of flip-flopping and going back and forth. It's really, like, based on, like, more and more data that we've been getting. So that's why the mask voices have been more amplified from healthcare, not because we're, like, changing our mind all the time, but because we're, you know, we're incorporating new evidence as we go along. And, you know, I think it's understandable why a lot of people sometimes feel frustrated or give up, because in the beginning, people were minimizing masks, but now it seems that everybody's talking about it. And that's mainly because we have more data and evidence, and that gets to the heart of Sarah's question, I think. So there's a bunch of different evidence, both from the lab, from humans, and then from populations. And I'll just briefly summarize each of these three buckets. So from the lab, they're like these interesting, I think one of the best studies I saw recently was like hamsters. So like they put hamsters in these little cages with barriers to simulate masks. And
they had hamster masks? I'm sorry, I just had to...
I was hoping they had hamster masks, and like some of their social media images had little hamsters wearing masks, but actually they didn't. They just simulated the masks.
Oh, okay.
With these sort of like barriers with hamsters in cages next to each other, or in boxes next to each other. And the barriers between the two hamsters simulated the kind of mask. So like they had a infected hamster, an uninfected hamster, and various mask scenarios simulated by these barriers. And the biggest bang for the buck is, of course, if you had a mask on the hamster that had coronavirus and the other hamster didn't, because that's really the spirit of when the mask works best. It's protecting the uninfected from giving infected. But what they found, interestingly, was even if the infected hamster didn't have the mask equivalent and the uninfected hamster had it, they still got protection. It wasn't like the best, but there was still some protection.
So it's defensive as well, which is something that, again, as you said, the knowledge is kind of evolving. Initially, we thought that this was more about transmission, but it sounds like there's also a defensive element to it, which is, you know, newer information.
Totally. And then I think the biggest kind of coolest examples are humans for me, which is, and I think everyone in the audience might have remembered those two Missouri hairdressers. And I remember at the time when they were found to have COVID and they had like cut the hair of, I think, 140 people. And everyone was worried that everybody would get COVID and it would be a huge outbreak. But absolutely zero people got COVID because they were both wearing masks. And then the last point I would make is that for COVID-19, you can't tell who's infected. So that debate about giving the person who has infection the power to wear the mask is kind of hard because, again, with asymptomatic disease, you can't tell. So that's why everyone should wear a mask.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong with UCSF. He is answering your questions about COVID and about the confusing evolution of science that we're watching kind of in real time and trying to understand as lay people, trying to make decisions in our own lives. Dr. Chin Hong is doing a great job of cutting through that confusion. I'm Libby Denkman in for Larry Mantle. Back with your questions in just a minute on Air Talk. Hey there, it's Air Talk. Libby Denkman here for Larry Mantle, taking your calls with Dr. Peter Chin Hong of UCSF Medical Center, infectious disease specialist. We're answering your questions about COVID, and we got a question from Emily in West LA, which I think gets to the emotions of this moment really well. Emily says, my mom's a geriatrics physician who is 67 years old herself. She has chronic respiratory disease. Her own doctor is telling her to stay home, but she feels an obligation to treat her patients. Emily says, I'm so worried for her, but I'm also angry. Does Dr. Chin Hong have any advice on how to talk to her?
That's a great topic. I mean, I think it really gets to so many issues that we're all feeling on all sides of the community, and anger, frustration, helplessness. I feel we've continued to feel that sense of helplessness even from the beginning of the epidemic to now, and feeling that we've lost control of that life that we're aspired to. And I think Emily's question gets to the heart of that because it tackles so many areas. First of all, the risk of frontline providers in the pandemic. The fear of infecting or having a loved one infected who is older and may have comorbidities like heart disease or other illnesses, and the helplessness that you feel like you're not in control because you can't take that magic pill, you can't convince your mom who is feeling this moral obligation to go to the front lines. So I would say there's several things, mainly. First of all, sitting down with Emily's mom and really, finding out if there are any other ways that she can help in the pandemic without necessarily putting herself at the front. There are lots of other things that people are doing to help, whether or not it's volunteer activities where you still would need medical knowledge in terms of, community education, like what I'm doing right now. Lots of things that people can still do. But if Emily's mom still wants to go to the front line, and I understand that urge myself, you really feel like you want to be part of that effort to, treat people and to, alleviate suffering and pain.
Because that's why you got into medicine, right? Yeah. To respond to something like this.
Yeah, but there are also different levels of risk in the healthcare setting. So Emily's mom doesn't have to take care of COVID patients necessarily. You can take care of people who are not COVID infected who need to be taken care of because we've been worried that all of these patients stayed away from the hospital because they were afraid. And the third line, the third point I'd make is if Emily's mom insists on going to the hospital to take care of COVID patients, that the hospital is a lot safer than it was a few months ago because, of course, we're always worried about PPE, but if there's enough PPE, and at UCSF we're doing universal masking, we're even using eye protection, and there haven't been any intra-hospital transmissions of COVID. So it's actually one of the safest places to be, to tell you the truth. Like, I worry more about getting COVID when I go to Trader Joe's than nothing about Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's, but
we won't single out one company. But yeah, we get your picture in terms of groceries, right?
Okay, yeah, or Safeway. That's a whole paycheck. But I think the hospital is a really safe place to be. But I would just go through that line of questioning, and I think the bottom line, not just about Emily's mom. I think it's a metaphor for how we talk about science and how we talk about COVID. We have to use empathy. We have to kind of talk to where people are rather than to come in with our own strong opinions, because that idea of meeting people where they are, I think, is really where we should focus our efforts on in all sorts of, you know, when people have different perspectives.
Okay, we're going to pivot to a little bit of a different, not trying to get you to, be a psychologist as well as an infectious disease specialist, although you did an excellent job in talking with Emily and sharing the really emotions of being a healthcare provider and the choices you have to make. And I thank you so much for that. Peter Chin Hong, doctor and infectious disease specialist at UCSF. Question from Judith and Laurel Canyon about if you're gathering in the backyard with, you know, socially distanced company and they want to come in just to use your restroom facilities or your bathroom. Is there anything that you should be worried about that?
Yeah, so that's a great question from Emily and a really interesting spin on the whole idea of moving from one less risky environment to, you know, potentially more risky, which is indoors, and the idea of surfaces and fomite transmission. So I would say that over time, we've probably, you know, it's still a potential area of transmission, meaning that you could potentially still get COVID from, you know, touching a surface vigorously and then touching your feet, nose, or mouth, which is the idea behind hand washing. So say that person from the barbecue outside goes indoors and uses the restroom. I would probably, you know, just like they do in, you know, when barbershops were open, now they're closed again, they would like clean in between customers. And then what they're trying to do is try to get at like doing a good job at disinfecting the surfaces as much as possible, particularly high touch areas like doorknobs and the faucet handles. So you can do that. Make sure there are not a lot of people indoors who are unmasked. And I think that should be fine because, again, if you continue to wash your hands, it doesn't matter what surface is contaminated, or if you have hand sanitizer outdoors, or maybe you ask the guest to like spray on some hand sanitizer before touching all the doorknobs and stuff indoors. Those will be all ways you can mitigate risk.
Just a final thought, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, anything else you're hoping to get out to people right now as you look at this, what's going on with the pandemic? You have about 30 seconds.
Well, I know it's frustrating for everyone. It's frustrating for me and my colleagues, my family, but I think we really have to hunker down and try to work on this together, and we can definitely do it, California.
I love the positivity and excellent advice from Dr. Peter Chin Hong. We always appreciate having you on the program. Thanks so much. I'm Libby Dankman, in for Larry Mantle today. Coming up at noon on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, Terry's talking with Michaela Cole, the creator, writer, and director and star of HBO series I May Destroy You, getting a lot of buzz right now. Stick around for that interview. Thanks so much for listening to Air Talk today.